Hello, and welcome to Northeast Christian Church's online service. We are so excited to have you here with us. Be sure to subscribe to NECC on all social media platforms. And to listen to our messages again, follow us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and YouTube. Thank you, and enjoy the rest of the service.
Just turns out that this Sunday in our Practicing the Way series, usually each January we go through this kind of focus of like, what are the rhythms of Christianity? And so Pastor Dylan so eloquently shared on fasting last week. How many of you were kind of like surprised by that, but blessed by it? And before that, he shared on prayer. Before that, we had a snow day, yay. And what I wanna share with you today is on the topic of stewardship and generosity. This is Pastor Dylan doing his best Italian pose, but Ruben Correa, I don't know if you're here, or Yesenia, his wife, he did some artwork for us some time ago. I want you to know that Pastor Dylan's really a gangsta. He's just a thug pastor. There's a, I love that picture. I told him, I said, thank you every year for letting me show this and carrying that on. But all right, let me just start by saying this. So, this is not a guilt-driven topic, and this is not a guilt-driven church. I want to throw up over addiction as much as I want to throw up over legalism. It makes me sick. We don't shame people into obedience. We follow and do what Jesus teaches and shares because we love him, not because we're afraid of him. If you're here and you're a guest for the first time, we talk about this about once a year. So I want you to know, you know, this is just in the rhythms of our spiritual disciplines of preaching, and you don't have to give a penny ever to this place unless you feel so moved to do so. And we believe one of the cultures of our church, we don't want to shame people and we don't want to control people. We exist to inspire and encourage people. Do you track that? But this is an area that is very dear to my life because I've practiced it my whole Christian walk and I've not forced it on anyone because really the Lord has to speak to you about this. But being a pastor teacher, it's important once in a while for us to look at what does God say about something. Here's my thing. I have a couple of friends in my life like this. There aren't many, but there's one particular friend of mine. Whenever he tells me to do something, it's not that I wait around to try and understand it or that I feel good about it. I just do it because 99% of the time he's right, and the 1% that he's not, I didn't even realize it. Anybody got a friend like that? It's just like, anybody got a spouse like that? This is your chance to get brownie points, gentlemen. Yep, it's good. In fact, he came in this church early on and he walked in years ago and he was standing right there. He just went 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. He looked up, he said, paint the back wall black. Kept walking along. He's like, get the pews out, put chairs in here and utilize the balcony. Man, you could get a lot of people in here. And just, I was like, okay, it's gonna take time to get there, but forever we were looking at architectural plans of like turning this thing white and doing all that stuff, and I was like, and then COVID hit and we needed a black background for videography and it just worked out, and but there have been life situations. For instance, when I began starting here at this church, there were people that were really upset about doctrinal stuff and they began to ask me, you know, are you preaching? Is this of God? Is this it? And he just said to me, this has nothing to do with you. It has nothing to do with your theology. Don't respond with it. All they want to know is if you're going to lead or not. And I was like, what? And he's like, just trust me. And so he said, here's how you respond. Just say, I respect your opinion, and you deserve to have that opinion and to exercise the freedoms with it. This is just what we're going to do for the next few weeks. And if you don't want to show up, it's okay. Isn't that a wise response? And so he used to always say this stuff to me. I just never even did it. This particular topic is one of those things when it comes to Jesus sharing in my life, I just never questioned it. I did it. But as I began to move forward, I realized the honest questions that people have about it, and I feel like it needed some honest answers. So I just dedicated my life, my heart, my thinking to put myself in someone else's shoes. But this is like one of those things that Jesus says to me, hey, Paul, just do it. Don't figure it out. Watch me figure out. When the pieces don't fit, God makes the difference up. And I'll share a couple of stories and different things, but I am not talking about and calling it tithing and offerings, even though that's part of it, because Jesus really speaks of this topic from the vantage point of generosity and being a generous person and blessing other people. In fact, let me just tell you a true story without any names, because the person deserves their privacy, but this Saturday I did breakfast with somebody. I was like, oh my gosh, this is a friend. And we just shared some things that we were carrying, burdens, and all of a sudden this one particular waitress that's there, it's the nearest breakfast place, so we go there all the time, and she's got a son who's struggling with addiction, and you know, so she comes up and she's sometimes sarcastic to me. She's just a New Englander. And she comes up to the table and she's like, I'm going to start a GoFundMe thing because my tips are not covering the difference here. My long-term goal is to get her to come to church and she'll eventually get here. But her son's in and out of rehab. And after we were done eating breakfast, I said, I'm going to take the bill and take care of it. And you always got to fight with people for the bill. Why do we do that? I just like, if somebody takes the bill, I'm like, thank you so much. Next time I'm paying. So I took it, and that was the position. But as I got ready to leave, he turned around and he said, they put down $40 and said, please give this to that waitress. Just tell her that God cares, you know. And they said, Pastor, you come into contact with a lot of other people that normally have needs. So here's another stack, and that was $100. And he said, give this to somebody who needs it. And I said, you know, it's funny, because after I leave here, I'm going to help somebody who's trying to fix some things in their house, and their budget's very tight. And so I was able to, before I leave, turn around and say, hey, the person I was doing breakfast with just wanted to say, God bless you, and here you go. And she just got tears in her eyes, and she was like, is he still here? She wanted to say, said, nope. That's the way we roll, us Christians. We just bless you and we're gone. And then I walk into the house of this person who I'm helping them fix some things. By the way, I know how to fix stuff. And if I can't fix it, I know somebody who can. But please, I'd be sad if I could help you. And my life's busy, but it's busy helping people. And you know, so I go over there, and I could see they're trying to, instead of replace the cabinets, they're kind of putting wood putty fill on stuff, and you know, all this different stuff just to get it done. And you know, they don't, the budget's tight. And I go, hey, and they start talking about they have to go to Home Depot. And I was like, you know what? Somebody just gave this to me a little while ago. Said, give this to somebody who's in need. And I said, I happen to know exactly who needs that. Drop that. And I know that the things they had to get was more than $100. But boy, that blessed them so much. Have you ever been blessed by somebody? Yeah, that's not rhetorical, right? I hear you guys like, yeah. I've been so blessed through my life. I can't even be, my wife came up to me, and I was asking her different stories, and she started telling one after the other, and then all of a sudden she goes, I could talk for hours on the blessings of God in this. And I said, maybe one day you'll get up there and do that. And then she left. It's a wonderful story in the book of Luke. It's also in Matthew, but Luke says something a little bit different. There's a master who was going away to another land, and so he called 10 servants together. I never caught this. I always thought it was just 3. He calls 10 servants together, and he gives them all a minus, which is basically 100 days' worth of wages. So it gives you gives them one third of a year's worth of money. And he says, I'm going away. And when I'm away, take this and make something with it. Do it. And in Luke's telling of it, not only do we realize there's 10, the story only focuses on 3. And I'm sure those other guys might have fallen into different categories. But the first guy, he says, here's 1 year's wage I've got for you, 3 1/4 years wages on top of it profit. And the guy's like, oh my goodness. Imagine if you gave somebody $100 and they came back and gave you $1,000 after you were away and said, hey, here's what I did with it. This is called a financial advisor. And if you need one, we have one that works in this church that I'd love to refer you to. But maybe you're like me and you're like, I'm more broke than the Ten Commandments, so don't need a financial advisor. But he says, thank you. And then he goes to the other guy and he says, Master, I took your 1 and I made 5 with it. And so he's like, oh my goodness, imagine giving some $100 and they come back and they give you $600 in return. And then the last guy, he goes up to him and he says, here is your 100 wages, your mean is back. I know what kind of guy you are. I know if I lost this money, you would be upset with me. So I kept it real safe and here it is. And he goes, you wicked servant. First of all, wouldn't you be upset if someone called you cheap and mean? He says, you wicked servant. He goes, basically like, I gave this to you to do something with it. You did nothing. I wouldn't have been disappointed if you tried and lost, but you could have tried and done at least put it in the bank and gotten 1% interest on it. And he kicks the guy out. What is Jesus talking about in this story? He's talking about stewardship. He's talking about stewardship. You see, in the Bible and in Judaism, there's a story of the prodigal son who runs away. And when the son comes back, the father throws a party, but the oldest son is upset, the one that stayed in church, the one that stayed there. And he goes, you know, I've worked hard. I didn't waste your money. You never threw me a party. And the father says something very interesting concerning stewardship and generosity. And it's known in Judaism. He says, my son, you've been with me all this time. All that I have is yours. You see, Jesus is actually quoting from a rabbi before his time. And he said it like this. There are 4 types of people. What's mine is mine. And what's yours is yours. This is an indifferent person. What's yours is mine, and what's mine is mine. This is a wicked person. And he goes through all these things, and then he says, there is a type of person who says, all that I have is yours. Every gift, whether it's a gift of your mind, your body, your heart, your financial resource, God wants you to look at your life differently and be able to see that all that you have is because of what He has allowed you to be able to have. In other words, you're a steward. See, this is the mistake that we make. Is that we think he's my God, it's my resources, my investments, my money, my talent, my, instead of realizing that God has made me the way I am. In fact, there's 3 times a day that a Jewish person prays, and they pray what's called the Shema. And they say this, they say, Hear, O Israel, the Lord your God, the Lord, He is one. Sometimes they pray 5. But the Shema in the time of Jesus was in 3 times when they would do this in the time of Christ. And they would pray it in Hebrew. You want to hear it in Hebrew? Shema Israel Adonai Elohehu Adonai Echad Uvehol Levavta Uvehol Nafeshka Uvehol Moecha. Here's how it goes. It says, Hear, O Israel, the Lord your God, He's one. And you shall love the Lord your God with your heart, all of it, with your soul, your emotions, all of it with your physical strength. How much? All of it. It's not written in any other way to say, whatever God's given you, you're to worship him with all of it. And in Judaism, this is something in Christianity I wish we grabbed, held tighter to, because their Savior is, it has become our Savior, amen? We're grafted into that vine. But this is an important thing to understand, that stewardship, when you begin to look at your life, not as your life, Jeremiah said it like this, "Oh Lord, I know that a man's life is not his own." When you really begin to see that you are a steward for the dash between your birth and death, and that God has gifted you to bless, to be blessed, and to be a blessing, you take a different approach to how you live your life, how you spend your time, how you pursue things, and how you handle your resources. Because at the end of the day, we're coming back to Jesus and saying, here's what I did with what you gave me. And one day, every single one of us, whether we're a follower of Christ or not, whether we're watching online or listening to this in Spotify or watching it live stream right now, however you're hearing this, one day you will stand before Jesus and he will ask you, what did you do with what I gave you? We'll give that accounting. Now, there's a difference between being shamed by someone versus saying, I wish I did more. And I think that what God is looking for us is to do what we can with what we have. My friend John, my first Christian friend, he was a victim of genetics, and he had Down syndrome, and he had a faulty heart valve, and he was a ward of the state, and he was abandoned when he was a kid. But man, he gave more of his mind and more of his heart to Jesus than anyone I knew. My dear Christian friend, my first Christian friend, couldn't understand half of the things that I preach in a church, but oh my goodness, he understood what it was to love somebody. He understood what it was to forgive somebody. He understood what it was to bless somebody. He overheard me say, I lost all my friends in church. And he came up to me, he's like, hey, Paul, I want to be your friend. Can I come over to your house? And don't get me wrong, I was just kind of like, oh, great. You become a Christian, you give up drugs, you give up alcohol, you give up sex out of marriage, and then you get a new set of friends, and this is what you get. And he came over to my house, and we prayed, and he said, hey, before I go, let me just pray with you. Paul, Lord, I just pray for Paul, and the presence of Jesus filled that room so beautifully. I haven't sensed its equal since. And when he left, from day one, I understood there's a difference between having a mind versus giving God all of the mind that you have. There's a difference between having resources versus seeing it as a steward of those resources. We're so selfish. We're so selfish. We can be stingy in certain areas. And it was really beautiful to see what this person did on Sunday. And I just think it's so important for us to see this from an area of stewardship. Now, if you fail to plan, you plan to fail. I'm just going to say this very quick. Probably one of the best programs that are out there, whether you're Christian or not, to help get your finances in order is a ministry we do from time to time here called Financial Peace. If you have never done a budget, and you have to do these over and over again through your life, I recommend you do it. And if you have never assessed your debt and the interest rates that you're paying, I highly recommend you do it and you begin to work towards getting out of that problem. But if you fail to plan, you plan to fail. Get yourself on a budget. If you've never done it, doesn't matter whether you have $1 million or if you have a minuscule amount of money, that's in there and I provided that for you to take a look at. Here's the thing I would say about Dave Ramsey's ministry is that I think that he's got so many great things to say. There's a little loophole because he doesn't understand those of us that are really, really poor It takes a lot longer. He makes some assumptions, but a lot of the podcasts that he's doing now, he tends to be very arrogant. It's kind of, I kind of look at him and I'm like, this guy's really, he's a Christian, and his program is incredible, but some of the things that are coming out of his mouth make me want to pastor him. But just, you know, I mean, we all call people dummy from time to time, but it's almost like the standard of like, everybody should be rich, and if you're not, it's your stupid fault. And that's easy to say when, you know, so understand your pastor wants to pastor Dave Ramsey, and I'm actually going to call him and send a letter to him, just because I believe if you want to say something, don't say it behind somebody's back, give it to him, but to say like, bro, you would be so much more effective if you were more compassionate for those of us that are suffering. And if you were a little bit less flippant with the way that you talk about, I know you hate debt, but hate debt, not the debted, right? And so your pastor says, take him with a grain of salt, but one of the things we did with that program, it said, get rid of your credit card debt. And so my wife and I, we chopped up all our credit cards, we paid them off. Can I just tell you something from stewardship point of view? I've owned credit cards. I've never paid interest, a penny of interest on them, ever. Ever. Because in stewardship, you learn how to live within your means. And those guys that were given that money exceeded that, but that's where a budget, if you don't tell your money where to go, and if you don't get yourself out of debt, you're going to struggle with those things. And so, again, I say this to you, whether you are living on an EBT card and you're trying to figure it out, or you are a multimillionaire, you know, to be able to figure out what to do with your resource and say, God, I want to glorify you with my life. There is nothing wrong with being rich. Nothing wrong with it. There's nothing wrong with being poor. Nothing wrong with it. There is something very wrong, whether you're rich or poor, if you are a poor, irresponsible steward of what you have. And there's a more excellent way that God can help us to, and there's tons of proverbs on this stuff. Here's the other thing I want to just say very quickly as we dig into a portion of this. I also included two letters in the packet that I gave you because my wife and I have not only give to, my tithe has to go to the district. It doesn't come to the church. It goes to the district, and that's a letter showing that I tithe consistently. And this is a letter from the church and two board members, from the bookkeeper and two board members, that states that my wife and I give beyond the tithe to missions, and that's how we practice this. Now, if you have not consistently tithed, or if you have not even set up and said, we're going to give to missions, or you're struggling to get there, hear me. This isn't about guilting or shaming you. But I think it's important for you to hear from a pastor that he actually has the integrity of what he's preaching. And you can say that again. I just think, like, you don't get that chance, right? You just, some of you have the ninth gift of the Spirit, the gift of suspicion, you know? And so I just want to get that beyond you. Let me just tell you, as a steward of this church, I'm not the first steward. Pastor Dick was stewarding this church before I came along with Pastor Guyberson. And the building we stand in is completely mortgage-free, not because of what I did, but because of what he did. And they suffered, and they got creative. Sometimes they put a metal beam over there, but then they found out over on this side they could use a wooden beam, and it would do the same thing, and they say, is it cheaper? Yep, let's put the wooden beam on that side. And it does the job? Okay, let's do that. And they figured it out, and they had a mortgage burning ceremony. Was anybody here for that? Wave your hand real quick if you were here, just to see a couple of you. Yeah, they burnt the mortgage. I would have loved to have been here for that. I love fire. And there was a architectural drawing that was made that this building was supposed to go all the way back and then to the left, but you know why it doesn't do that? Is because they were good stewards and they didn't want to have a multi-million dollar mortgage, and so they built it as they went. When I started here and I was given my my meanness, my 100-year salary of the steward of this building and the steward of its resources. And when we started, it was like 50 people, I think, when we came in. And 8 years later, Pastor Dylan, this is as much to your credit. We've been growing in the resource of people now that we're not even close to where Pastor Dick and Pastor Guyberson had it. There were times where this church was a 500-person church. And my prayer is that we get to that. The next generation brings it to such great stewardship. But I went to an architect and I said, what do we do with our church? We're stewarding this. And he said, well, you've got a foundation back there and you'd modernize it if you expanded your thing that sticks out there as like a kind of like a half of a stop sign of a foyer and close it in glass and then do two stories in the back, a multi-purpose room and a kids designated space, because you guys are growing and this is before COVID. And then he said, yeah, I think the whole thing could be done for $1,250,000. And then I threw up in my mouth and I said, thank you. And this is looking from Google Earth, Earth, Earth. And we started realizing, man, these guys have paved this parking lot several times over. And then I got an estimate of how much it would be to pave the whole thing, and then how much would it be to do it in an a la carte fashion. They said $150,000. Again, I threw up in my mouth and took a sip of water and then said, okay, you know what we're gonna do? We're gonna put rocks in that area of dirt there. We need the parking. We can't get the people in without the parking. And then all of a sudden, a miracle happened. Colleen Bergendahl, who does this all the time, stepped forward and said, I can find somebody that'll donate rocks. And then for the past 4 years, 5 years, there's this guy who's in the rock construction business, never seen his face. He just says, I want to help the church. And they every year they're pouring rock there and rolling it out and rock and rolling it out. When the day comes that we pave that, it's going to be solid and smooth. But if you get muddy in that parking lot, please know the reason you are is because we're trying to be good stewards, because God's given us one minus or meanness, and we're trying to make 10 out of it, and so we're trying to do it. Now, let me just show you what this, when it comes to this building, as much as I'd like to make it look contemporary, no matter who you are, when you drive by this place, you only see one thing on the ground. We have been called the Hershey Kiss Church. And then when I was looking at the parking lot plan, I shared that with the architect who, we have two great things in this church. We have an incredible Harvard grad architect who loves Jesus, and we have an incredible Catholic lawyer from Notre Dame who is more vicious than a cobra. And he has just helped us. We have a great lawyer and you need a couple things in your life. Great wife, great spouse, great doctor, great lawyer, great pastor. It's important. And a great architect. But when I showed him this, I told him about the Hershey Kiss vision, you know, like everybody calls it, and he laughed and he said, actually, in the architectural world, we call this the SS Enterprise, because they look at everything from above. And I was like, this is getting worse. Like, I can't do anything with this, you know? And so this architect sits us down, talking about stewardship, talking about seeing that everything that God gives us is stewarded to us and we want to make the most of it. So he said, we're not building a building until we max out the space that we have. So we figured out, what can we do? Children and nursery and toddler, we're meeting in the back left and right rooms. And I said, what if we turn these circle edges here into nursery and toddler and they're close to the parents to be able to go there? We had to spend like $5,000 to move an electrical box 1 foot to get a door so that we could make that whole thing work. I discovered that. I said to the architect, Glenn, what if we move this over? And he said, that would do it. That's according to code. Everything he does, he knows the code. And so we did it, and we have a wonderful nursery and toddler. We were good stewards with our carpet, and the time had come for us to change over the carpet. COVID hit, and we had to become an online church. I have a friend who does halftime commercials for the Super Bowl, and he said, Paul, I'm going to teach you how to get a $1.5 million video system for about $100,000. And let me tell you what, I appreciate the board. In COVID, I really don't think we would have made it had the board not seen that we needed to redirect resource to this. And so we redirected it. We still reap the benefits from what we have in place, but we survived the storm of COVID because we were able to say, hey, we need to get online, we need to do this. So let me just show you this real quick. Here's what we're going to be stewarding with the future. Look at the outside balcony. We decided instead of risers, we need that space. And so what we're going to do is we're gonna get just tables. We're gonna find secondhand high tables and chairs, and we're going to be able to get more space. We're pretty American crowded right now. Every single one of you has, how many, if you have nobody who's a stranger next to you with space, raise your hand. If you have space, put that down. Now, if you have space between you and the other people, raise your hand, right? But technically, according to who we are, it's crowded in here right now, right? So that's why we're gonna put those things upstairs, and we were looking at all kinds of designs and how are we gonna do it. But here's one of the other things we're stewarding. I want you to see it. This is our foyer right now. And red is a great choice of color because it hides stains and it hides stuff, but we needed to change. The best color is dark and or mid-tone grays. So in the next few months, the board's approved, we're gonna be putting in a carpet in there and it's gonna be nice, and you'll spill your coffee on it and then you'll come tell someone right away, because if you clean up coffee while it's still wet, it doesn't stain. And there we go. Yeah, that's what I'm saying. So stewardship is a better way for us to look at what God's given us. Why? Because stewardship involves relationship. See, money is just a resource. You use it, or it uses you. You worship it, or you use it. I always had the same with my kids growing up. This, it went, and it would be with anything that was dangerous, whether it was firearms or power tools. I would say this is a tool, not a toy. And when you treat a tool like a toy, people get hurt. And more marriages have ended in divorce because people have used finances as a toy to play with than they have as a tool to bring both of their lives to a better place. So all the more reason why you should do a budget. Let me sum up what I'm gonna say here in a short bit. And I'm gonna pick this topic up probably next week, which means half of you are not gonna show up. So, but I feel the press of time. When it comes to money and talking about it in the church, it's a really touchy subject, because in the 1970s and 80s, it seemed like most of the scandals were all financial. Some of you might be too young to remember a name called Jim Baker and the PTL Club. They had been found guilty of mail and of television fraud. I don't think that any ministry should be scooping money from people across the country. I think that people should be doing that through our local church. We actually raise money for missions so that we can budget who we can take on, and that we aim for that. But they got literally hundreds of thousands, if not a million plus people, sending their money, their tithe, and the federal government was like, this is a problem, and they shut it down. They did the movie recently on Tammy Baker and kind of made her look like life look. You saw the hurt that was involved, and there's some truth to that. But I was in a place called the Dream Center, Los Angeles Dream Center, and I was spending a few days with Tommy and Matthew Barnett, and they have this thing called the War Room, and they're the ones that kind of oversee that Phoenix First. And while I was there, unbeknownst to me, Jim Baker was. He had just gotten out of prison. And he was walking across the room. And as he was walking across the room, I went up to him and I said, Mr. Baker. And he had a lady with him. He had, since his wife had left him. And I go, it's so good to see that you're out. I wouldn't wish prison on anyone. And he just said, yeah. He goes, you know, Paul, I wrote a book and the title was right. I was wrong. That was the title of my book. What I did was wrong. How I conducted myself was wrong. Now, here's the beautiful thing of his story. The father and son, Matthew Barnett and Tommy Barnett, have a value that our church has, which is called restoration. See, the world doesn't need adoration. What the world needs is when somebody self-destructs their life, they need someone to come in with restoration. Our church has restored many, many ministers here who have made terrible mistakes, and some of them you might know and some of them you might not. They've looked like visitors to you, but they were sent here by our district because they know that our church is a church that believes in restoring broken people. How many of you need some restoration in your life? You know, how many of you need grace? Like we say it all the time, we're not here to control your life. We want to inspire it and motivate it. And what better place to do that when someone has blown it like Jim Baker, but that Tommy Barnett and Matthew Barnett saw that and they said, God, you've given us all of this. We want to be good stewards. And he said to Jim when he came out, he said, move in. They let him start to do a Bible study. And in that phase of his life, I can only speak to the phase up, you know, for the in through the 90s after he got out of prison. He was a restored life. It's a touchy subject because there are examples out there of people who lack integrity, are not good stewards. Now, here's the thing. God has set up a system we'll talk about next week of tithes and offerings that I'm going to share with you. It's in this pack. I'd encourage you to use it as devotional this week, but I think it's so important for us when we look at things from a stewardship perspective. How we handle it is so important. And let me just share two verses, and I'm going to ask the worship team to come up here because I'm comfortable with what I've shared and how I've shared it. It hasn't felt like a traditional message, but I'm good with this, and I'm good with us carrying this conversation to next week. There's good material here that we'll get to. But when it comes to God's commands, it says in Exodus 22:29-30, you shall not delay to offer from the fullness of your harvest and the overflow of your presses and the firstborn of your sons you shall give to me. You shall do the same with your oxen and your sheep. And then in Exodus 23:19, for of the first fruits of the land you shall bring into the house of the Lord. And in fact, Leviticus 27, listen to this, 30 and 33. A tithe of everything of the land, whether grain from the soil, fruit from the trees, belongs to the Lord. It is holy to the Lord. Whoever would redeem any of this tithe must add a fifth of its value. So in other words, if you gave a lamb to God and then said, I need it back, or you change your mind or whatever, God says, sure, no problem. Just multiply that by five and return that to the kingdom. It sounds like the mob. I sometimes say things that come through my mind. Every tithe of the herd of the flock, every tenth animal that passes under the shepherd's rod will be holy to the Lord. No one may pick out from the good and from the bad. In other words, you don't bring your bad offering to God. Make any substitution. If anyone does make a substitution, both the animal and its substitute become holy and cannot be redeemed. And different things that I want to say. There's different thoughts on this. A lot of people argue and say, you know what, tithing's in the Old Testament, and we're not under the law. We're going to talk about that next week. The Bible says, I decide what to give, because the Bible says I'm going to give from the heart. You actually will see that from language and what you read, that actually isn't speaking about you from your heart. It's talking about you sizing up what a tenth looks like and giving that to God. We don't tithe to the church. We meet people's needs, like the book of Acts. If you do it and look at it from those perspectives, chances are we come short. All these different things are stuff I want to talk with you, but if you've made $1,500 this last year, you are in the top 20% of the world's top income earners. If you have sufficient food, decent clothes, and live in a house or apartment, and have a reasonably reliable means of transportation, you're among the top 15% of people in the world. In the Great Depression, the average giving was 3.3%. A time when they didn't even know if they would make it. Today's average Christian giving is about 2.1%. What happened? And what I want to do is, because this topic is so important, I want to unpack it next week fuller. But from the idea of stewardship and generosity, I just say this. Zap me some music. I asked my wife to peel my orange today. Pastor Dylan, come here for a second. I'll just give this one to you. I feel God really did a wonderful thing in putting 10 pieces in an orange, right? So if the Lord blesses you with an orange, and he does this, who's receiving the greater gift? We are. Is God being greedy? You see, actually, what we do in this church with the missions and bringing the gospel, like Emily does, to getting people to go to places. You could have a seat and eat that orange in church, by the way. It's really beautiful. God says, bring the first fruits. Now, back in the time of the Bible, everything was agriculture, animals and stuff. Later on, they got involved with metal chunks and they would weigh that. But then everything turned to an industry of coin. And they basically, God said, give the first fruits. In other words, don't wait till the end of the year and then give. He says, right from the gate, honor me first with the first fruits of your wealth. And from those letters, you can see that your pastor practices that. Right here, I got a chocolate bar. It's got your name written over it. Come on. Yeah, you. You come on down. You're the next contestant on this chocolate bar is yours. And so Hershey is wonderful. 3, 6, 9, 12. So Hershey's is really great in that they give us enough math to work with. Hold that for a second. And let me just give that to you. There you go. Oh, no. It's 5-second rule. 4, 3, 2, 1. Good. Go ahead. You can eat it. Look at this. I love chocolate. Who got the better deal? You did. Go eat that. You can eat it in church. It's okay. Everybody loves M&Ms. Make sure she eats the whole bag. It's not for you. Beautiful story. And I'm going to save everything I have here for next week. I'm comfortable with where we went today. Kind of sets the stage of the heart of stewardship and all that. But talks about a little kid, true story, his nephew it was. And he loved Skittles. And so, Drew, I know you love Skittles. I'm not going to point you out or anything, but just come grab the bag from me. Yeah, just grab it. Come on, quick. Just grab it. I'm not going to talk to you or point you out. You can see the difference between Ethan and Andrew here, right? Here, run, take it, and sit back. You want me to throw it to you? It's already open. It's okay? Okay. Five-second rule! So he gives his nephew the Skittles, and then as he's chewing them, you know, kid drooling down, he says to him, he says, hey, can I have a couple of those Skittles? And his nephew goes, no. And he's a little creep. And he said, I didn't say it to him, but I just gave you that whole bag of Skittles, and all I was asking for was just a couple of them, and you won't even give me any of those? And he flipped it and he said, you know, that's kind of like us when it comes to generosity and stewardship and Jesus. The prodigal father said, all that I have is yours. You see, we have to change our mindset to understand that your life is not your own. Your things are not your own. Your giftings are not your own. Now, there are some of us here that handle resource and wealth and multiply it. And just like those stewards that received 100 days wages and gave back 1,000 days wages, there's nothing wrong with that. There's nothing wrong with doing that. But there is something wrong with it where we don't honor God with what he's blessed us with. And when, more importantly, we don't realize he's the one that's blessed us with the ability to acquire wealth. In fact, that's what he said to the Israelites when they came into the Holy Land. He says, be careful when you come into the land of blessing that you do not forget where you've come from, and that is the Lord that gives you the ability to acquire wealth. And God is just saying, it's not that I need what you have. It's I don't want your possessions to possess you. And I want this world to be impacted through you. And I want you to know, this church lives within its means. And sometimes we dare outside of it, but we never recklessly do that. So my wife and I are, I close with this thought, my wife and I are, for many years, we worked for a salary that would have been below any of you saying yes to. But we knew that's what God had called us to. And in the middle of winter, there was a girl in the college who was in the Northeast and had no winter boots. And my wife was like, I'm gonna get her some boots. And she took her out. $30 was all that we had extra. That was it. And she bought her a $30 pair of boots. And she never failed to just every year thank her for her winter boots. But after my wife gave that, she said, what did I just do? You see, because our budget was so tight, that $30 was already accounted for elsewhere. That was the means by which we were living and doing what God was calling us to do. And then she turned around, she was at church, and if I get the story right at church, someone just turned around and just said, I feel like the Lord wants me to give you this. And they turned around and they gave her, I think in this case it was $300. Just said, God bless you. Now here's the other side to the story. There's never been a season in our life that we have not failed to give to missions or to give back to the Lord. Because I've come to find that God can do more with what we give him and what remains with us than what we can do when we control it all. And that's our way of saying to God, Lord, be Lord of my life, be Lord of my wife. But I only have one master, that's you. Miracle after miracle. All of my friends were working two jobs to buy a house, and we found one for $75,000. Everybody scurrying to find a home when the school relocated up here, and we found a home for $186,000. And then we sold our home, and I thought we were moving to California, or to Seattle, Washington. And in the midst of a refugee bouncing around renting, my wife finds a house for $220,000. And believe me, they're fixer-uppers. What am I trying to say is that when the pieces don't fit, God can do more with 90 than you can with 100. Not because he demands your finances, but he wants lordship over every area of your life. And if you can see this issue from a perspective of stewardship, I think it could change you. I think it could get you to realize, God, I trust you. And I know what it is like to be in need, and I know what it is like to have a lot. But I also understand that whether I've had a lot or I've had little, God has always taken care of us. And so a master goes off and he hands out 10 minas. What are you gonna do with what he's given you? I'm gonna multiply it. Some of you are able to take one and make it 100. That's awesome. But are you going to first fruit God? No, I'm going to hold it until the end of the year because of compounded interest. There's a reason why the Lord said the first fruit. You know why? Because he doesn't want us retaining the control. He wants us to learn trust in this area. My wife could talk to you for hours of how we did when we couldn't do, and God provided. And some of you could do the same. And my encouragement to you is this: be a good steward. See your life and all that God has given you as a steward. Honor God with the first fruit of that. And can I please tell one more story, because it's not orthodox? Is it okay? Thank you. I heard that. Yes. I had one time where I forgot to send off my tithe to the district. That's where we give it. And so the district superintendent said to me, "Hey, Paul, is everything okay?" And I'm like, "What?" And they're like, "Well, you know, you haven't been tithing for 6 months." Okay. Now this is, I'm a minister, so I'm supposed to have this right. I go, "Oh my gosh." I go, "I'm destroyed. I'm barely making a living if I give that up." And he goes, ho. He goes, God's not a bookie, and he's not in heaven with a ledger. What if you just say, from this moment forward, you just make sure you stay on top of that? I was like, that's a good idea, you know? So we went and we took that posture from that moment forward. Maybe you're here and you've been trying to kind of get this issue right, and you just kind of said, okay, how am I going to take care of this? And long story short, it comes down to like not seeing God as a bookie, but just say, from this moment forward, I'm going to glorify God. And then my wife's making that child cry. Thanks, honey. Here's the twist to it. About a few years back, I accidentally got lost in a year ago. I got lost and I accidentally set up giving twice as much. And with my father's death, I couldn't keep on top of that. And I'd given them, you know, several thousand dollars in advance. And so he calls me up. He's like, "Hey, Paul, we're ready to send this back to you." And I was like, "You know what? There was a time in my life where you said to me, why don't we just see God as a good father trying to help us steward our life and forget about everything that we missed and move from this moment forward?" And I said, "How about you hold on to that and I do the lesson in reverse?" And he just was like, and now the byproduct of that is that every major step in my life, and to whether it's going to the Middle East or any of that, the district is behind it with their pen and their checkbook saying, we'll cover that. I've come to find that God is not looking to keep perfect records and shame you. He's looking for you to trust him. And if you struggle in this area, he's gonna, sometimes God just instantly brings a miracle your way to show you, see, I've got this. So thank you for letting me ramble on this. I have everything I want to say in my notes, and I'll say it next week because I think it's important for us to hear this. But I think it's important for us to see it from a stewardship perspective. Listen, God says this to you and I: all that I have is yours. How many of you are in need here today? You're saying, I need God's provision. I don't know how I'm going to pay for my schooling. I don't know how I'm going to pay for my kids' schooling. I don't know how I'm going to manage these. Listen, you might have a lot, but it's overextended in different areas. And you're like, I don't know how I'm going to balance these budgets, pay that other mortgage or whatever. God knows your giftings. God knows your needs. And he can make up the difference. Let's stand to our feet. And let me just pray this prayer for you, a blessing for you this morning. Lord, all that we have is yours. I know that you would say to us that all that I have is yours, but we say to you, all that we have is yours. You're not a bookkeeper, an accountant in heaven, keeping records and shaming your children. You love us. In fact, there are many of us that are trying to work this issue out, and yet you're still showing up in love. And Lord, right now, I just pray, if there are people in this room that feel pressure or a push to feel like they have to give and they haven't bought into it from a perspective of stewardship and scripture, that you would not let them take a step. We don't want their money. You don't want their money. You're not ashamed of them. You're not embarrassing them. You want to give them an opportunity to see that you are the God that provides for them. That's what we need, God. There are some things that are just too big for us to take care of. And Lord, when the pieces don't fit, you make up the difference. So we say to you, help us to be good stewards with what we've been entrusted. Help us to honor you with the first fruits of our life. And God, we give you all the glory and the honor and the praise. And we ask this in Christ's name. Amen. God bless you. Listen, just a reminder, for if you want to meet the pastors and the elders, we're going to be in the back right room. And thank you so much for letting me just kind of have a conversation today. God bless you. Have a great week.
Thank you again for being with us today. To listen to all of our messages, follow us on Apple Podcasts, YouTube, and Spotify. And go to lowellag.org or ne-cc.org to keep up with all of our news, updates, and events. Thank you, and God bless.